people who love them.
Hello again, my friends, and welcome back. This is The Thing About Cars, recording, as always, in Strongbox West in Atlanta. Around the table, we're surrounded by some friends.
Ben.
Paul.
Becca.
And I'm Mickey. Let's start this episode with a quick moment of Grand Trivia Auto. Now that we've picked it up off the shelf and dusted it off, the question for today is, German immigrant brothers founded which company based in South Bend, Indiana in 1852? They manufactured a variety of items before marketing an electric horseless carriage in 1902. Is that company called Heine Velux, Studebaker, Jaeger, or Rickenbacker? Let's think about that for a while. We will answer that question at the end of the episode.
I almost feel like I need it repeated again. There was a lot of information
there. There's
a
lot of information there. I will repeat the question again. The question is, German immigrant brothers founded which company based in South Bend, Indiana in 1852? They manufactured a variety of items before marketing an electric horseless carriage in 1902. Was it Rickenbacker, Jaeger, Studebaker, or Heine Velux? I hope I'm pronouncing that last one correctly. So let's jump into today's agenda today. Paul, we originally spoke on the phone about talking about the fate of the Wankel engine and the future of the Wankel engine, which I think is an excellent topic. What happened? Why did Mazda choose not to produce it for the Mazda RX-7 anymore, or RX-8, wherever we're at? And I keep
well, the RX-8, which came into production in somewhere in 2000, I think late 2002, as a 2004 car for the United States, 2003 in Japan. That car did reasonably well initially in sales, but petered off, I think would be the term. Mm. Mostly due to perceptions that people have with it, some rightfully earned, reliability issues, and fuel efficiency. Fuel efficiency is something that the Wankel has had as an Achilles heel for its entire existence.
Really?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Because I thought it boasted better fuel efficiency by capacity compared to other conventional engines.
Complete opposite.
Opposite.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Something new every day.
Yeah. They're not known for their fuel efficiency.
Mm. They make a fair amount of power for their amount of displacement.
Yeah. Mm. So, in production, sold in the United States from 2004, I think we had our last ones in the 2011 model year. And in Japan, they made them through 2012.
Mm. And that was the end of placement in the RX.
Yes. And the key reason being, actually, I think that it was not meeting European standards of emission standards. Mm-hmm. As early as 2010, so I don't think they sold it in 2011 there, and there was no good way for them to be, so they lost a just a chunk of market there. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. So now that they're out of production, I've heard, in fact, I think Ben originally told us that they're going to bring the Wankel back as a supplementary engine in some agricultural capacity or something, or what was I remembering?
Well, what I heard was that it was going to be the like range extender engine in some like hybrid electric applications.
Is that right, Paul?
I believe that is 100% correct. Mm-hmm. So much so that it was just shown in the product that is, I think, debuted at the Tokyo Auto Show a few weeks ago. The Mazda MX-30 is an all-electric Mazda, their first all-electric vehicle. Mm-hmm. And they did mention that the rotary engine range extender will be a part of that depending on market. So they'll have different equipment for different markets, and some markets will have that range extender.
I'm looking at pictures of the MX-30 right now. It looks very similar to a particular Range Rover I've seen.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, it doesn't look that much different from a CX-5,
mm-hmm.
except the suicide doors in the back. Anyway.
That, it doesn't have that big honking grill that the current generation cars have.
Exactly.
I think it's built on the same architecture or platform as the CX-30.
Huh.
Which we're just getting in the United States here. I think the CX-30 is just coming to the U.S. market for 2020.
Yes.
By the way, that's a crossover that is between the CX-3 and the CX-5 size-wise. And the reason, I don't know if I should say this or whether you'd have that for a trivia someday, but the reason why it's not called CX-4 is because Mazda's using that name in the Chinese market with another CUV or SUV. Yeah.
So how are you feeling about all this? I mean, you know, we all grew up loving some variety of the RX-8. In fact, my brain sort of defaults to the RX-7 as the car that I remember from my youth, so to speak. And the loss of the Wankel engine, on the one hand, if it means better engines are coming, I'm happy about that. On the other hand, it's like, okay, I feel like we're losing history here, but well, how do you feel about this?
Devastated.
All right.
No, but actually hopeful is probably a better term. Up to last week, there was an interview done at, well, I think it was last week or last couple of weeks, the Tokyo Motor Show had the president of Mazda and Mr. Maeda, who is the head of design at Mazda, both were quizzed by some Australian journalists who love to ask them Wankel questions. Both of them suggested that they have to bring it, they want to bring it, some sort of a rotary powered car that is using it as the main power plant versus a range extender.
Yep.
So both of them stated that there are still some obstacles, but they really want to, but realize the time is against them. It's a race against time in terms of the changing standards that we're facing worldwide in the automotive industry.
So there is still going to be a rotary engine as a primary power plant and something.
That's their objective.
I see.
Now, when you look at Mazda's forecast, and when they show you what they're going to do through 2030 and beyond, there is nothing slated with a rotary engine other than as a range extender. But we only just recently saw some adjustments of that forecast, including a rear-wheel drive platform with an inline six-cylinder.
Interesting.
That we didn't know of prior.
Right.
So they've had some things that, some cards that are just being shown.
Right.
And I think it's probably kind of tied to the potential for.
Yeah. Yeah. Ben's been chomping at the bit here. Go for it, Ben.
Well, not really, but however, that said, I saw a really, really sweet looking, probably about 1985 RX-7 in traffic the other day. My head turned. I was like, oh.
There goes my future, or my past, rather. I'm going to change gears just a little bit here. Paul, what is your daily driver?
1996 Mazda Protege.
No way.
Nice.
Now, they came with two engine options. I could be driving the 1.8 BP engine powered one, but in fact, I'm using the Z5 1.5 engine. Manual transmission, by the way.
Yes.
Excellent.
Smaller than a bottle of Coke.
Okay. You have all the cars in the Mazda world available to you in your shop. You could easily have repaired and put an RX-8 under your feet, or anything else for that matter. Why do you stick with the Protege?
Simple, cheap fuel mileage. I get, even when I drive kind of hard, I can get close to 30 miles per gallon. I do have the project car as well, the 2006 MX-5 with an RX-8 motor in it.
What?
So.
And the irony of the older car being the daily driver and the newer car being the project. Now that's a very good thing.
We love irony.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I like it. So is the project car up and running?
It does run. It has been driven on the street, not much on through the parking lot at Mazmart. Mm-hmm. A bit, yes.
I was wondering if it was a good sleeper.
Tremendous sleeper, it shall be. It's the S2000 Fighter was the purpose of the car. Uh-huh. We realized since Mazda was using the same architecture, not platform, mm-hmm. there's a difference, for the NC MX5 2006 and late through 13,
okay.
and the RX8, that we could make that make that modification without too much difficulty.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was actually designed to take on the S2000?
Our design at Mazmart, yes. That was our purpose.
Mazmart design, yeah. Not Mazda.
But design. Mazda's purpose was, in design, was to share the rear wheel drive architecture for cost savings between the MX-5 and the RX-8.
Paul, this is fascinating. If a listener wanted to get in touch with you to talk shop or to order Mazda parts, how would you suggest they do that?
That's a good question. Paul@mazmart.com hopefully will be a good email for quite some time going forward. And our 800 phone number is 800-221-5156.
Great. Thank you. And I mean, if it's appropriate, if you don't want me to share that, I can.
Don't mind at all.
Okay, excellent. I mean, it's kind of weird. You know, Mazda has always been synonymous with the rotary engine, right? And it's just kind of weird now to think that, okay, that might just go away. And thankfully, it's not completely going away. But
So one more thing, unless you have anything else to ask me in relation to it. The folks at Mazda Japan and Mazda North America, the top people, are as much enthusiasts as any of us. Mm. So it's a crazy culture in their boardrooms. Yeah. They're full of people that get it.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to reach out. One of the ideas that we've had for changing up this show, and hopefully there are listeners out there who can help us achieve these goals, was to actually simply spend a day with a dealership or with a repair shop and just hang out for a while and test drive the new cars and take a look at the old ones, maybe talk to a technician or two. And that becomes the body of the podcast. So we're working on that to see if that might be a little more interesting, a little more fun. So if anyone can lend us a hand doing that, we'd appreciate it. There was a point to this.
I think we need to hang out with that car he's building.
Yes, I think you're right. I think I'd like to check that out for sure. Don't let my wife see it. She'll want to take it home. So thank you, Paul. This has been good.
My pleasure.
And, you know, I had the next agenda item on my brain, and I completely just dropped it. I had this perfect segue.
Actually, there's one I would love to hear about. I don't know whose it is. Autonomous car.
Yeah, that was Kathy's. Apparently, an autonomous car hit somebody.
And I wanted to hear about that.
Yeah.
Well, one thing I can.
It's actually happened twice, I think.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the one she had in mind, but there was one that made some news a couple of years ago. If I can speak today, one made news a couple of years ago. It was a Volvo being tested by Uber. And yeah. I believe it was in Pittsburgh. I can't remember, but it hit a pedestrian, someone who was pushing a bicycle across the street. Mm-hmm. The operator behind the wheel was not paying attention. She was playing with her phone the whole time. And you can see it in the camera they had inside the car. And it made a huge case. And one of the ironies with that was that if Uber's autonomous system had not been installed, if the Volvo had been left stock, it would never have happened.
Right.
They actually disabled Volvo's
safety features.
Yep. And so it's been an interesting case. There was actually recently a Nova episode about autonomous vehicles that looked into that as well as some other things. And of course, nobody involved would comment for the show.
Of course not.
Pretty fascinating.
Well, we'll have to ask Kathy about that next time she's at the table with us. Let's talk for a minute about this thing. Ben, you said light bars, LED light bars are a bad idea.
Well, I don't know if I put it that way, but I've become kind of annoyed lately with the ones people are putting on their vehicles. And of course, these are the little white LED bars. They're probably usually about 15, 18 inches wide. Mm-hmm. A lot of off-road guys put them on the roofs of their trucks, but a lot of people, in fact, a numbskull I saw on I-85 last night had one down below his front bumper, and they're usually at minimum poorly aimed. Sometimes they're way too bright. They're really annoying in traffic and, you know, borderline unsafe because of the amount of glare and brightness. Right. In fact, the one last night, and he had some really illegally bright headlights that were amazingly the exact same color temperature, as far as the shade of light produced. The two headlights and the LED bar below the bumper, you know, it looked like a face. It looked like the face of a head that had a glowing piece of burning phosphorus shoved inside it. But this thing was so incredibly bright.
Do you think about this sort of thing often, Ben?
No, but maybe it was just the hostility that the brightness brought on. Right. But this thing was so bright that, you know, I was probably going a little faster than I should to get away from it.
Yeah.
It was pretty obnoxious.
Well, I'm almost about to become one of those numbskulls because I have a 12-inch mini, I guess it's called a super slim bar, which is marketed as a spot/floodlight. So the middle 6 inches or the middle 4 inches are the spotlight, right?
Yeah.
And the outer 4 inches each are floodlights, and it's meant for low level in front of the car illumination.
And you're going to put this on your Honda?
I'm seriously considering it.
Off-road Honda.
Well, this is great if you are out in the country or something. If you're driving rural roads that aren't very well lit at night, great. And even then, aim it properly.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But in the city, you don't need it.
No.
Well.
Not at all.
Well.
This Honda has opaque headlights anyway, so I need to clean that up.
Yeah.
And once I do that, maybe I won't need the other stuff. But I've noticed that at a low level, there is, you know, the space immediately in front of my car is, I'm not happy with the way it's not lit up.
So.
Yeah. And I have a bunch of lights. I haven't wired them in. My big problem is where I was originally going to put the new accessory fuse panel. It's not going to work just because of the relays I chose to go with. They're just too large. Mm. So I'm seeking another place and start over with building the fuse panel, but I have all my lights and everything. And one of the things I'm going to do, you know how there's a lot of expletive people around here that love to get up behind you and just turn on the bright lights.
Yes.
And you know, you don't have a lot of recourse to, you know, somebody's behind me. Okay, I can flick off my thing and not, you know, the rearview mirror and not see it, but it's really rude.
Yeah.
And I love the switch I have picked out for this. I am putting some in the back. It originally started with just helping me down my driveway when it's really dark outside, because a lot of times I back down it. But my house is dubbed Hill House.
Oh, yeah. You should see her house, Paul. Paul hasn't seen the pictures, but it's like up there.
Yeah. I've actually had people come over, like repairmen or what have you, and ask me to back their vehicles down the driveway because they couldn't turn. Or, wow. So it started out that way, and then somebody decided to get all snarky because apparently people really hate it when a Jeep Liberty passes them. You know, they're okay with it when I do it in one of, you know, like my Mustang or something, but they get really teed off when it's, yeah, a car shouldn't be going faster. So I have these ones for the back, and the switch for it has two middle fingers sticking right up.
Oh boy.
It is the FU light. So if somebody wants to come behind me and flick on their bright lights, I'll show them what bright lights are.
God. I don't know. I'd be scared to do that in this town. You might get shot or something.
That's, I could be shot just driving around in my Mustang and passing somebody. That happens a lot too.
Enough,
so this town, it's,
Yeah.
I have a question on the topic of lights. I have observed during the course of the last 2 years, I'm just wondering if I'm alone in this observation, people driving without headlights on in the nighttime has become more common. My observation is the last 2 to 3 years in particular, people driving in the nighttime, either with no lights on whatsoever, or it appears that maybe they have daytime driving lights on the front and don't realize that they haven't turned on their rear lights. So there's nothing going on in the rear. And here we are on 285, and this person is oblivious.
I'd like to know how they're so oblivious that it's nighttime and and they haven't noticed that their dashboard isn't lit up, you know.
Well,
I think
though that
I think go ahead, Becca.
Sorry. Yeah, no, sometimes if you do the I just call them drills, the daytime running lights, or if you have your quarter lights on, some people just call them parking lights, your dashboard is still lit up.
But that doesn't explain the ones who got nothing lit up.
Well, that's the difference, stupid.
Though. I think, you know, even my Honda, my sister's Honda, that dashboard is lit up all the time. Hmm. And only dims if you turn on your headlights. But yeah. If you're not aware of that, or if you're the kind of person who drives around with your dashboard turned up full brightness all the time, then you're not going to know the difference.
Yeah, but the 15-year-old Hyundais I see driving around with no lights on, they don't have that characteristic.
No, they don't have that.
Well, it could also be partially just how much light is out there. It's not like we're driving in the country. 285 has streetlights.
Yeah.
You know, and especially if you're in an area where they haven't turned them off to save money, or somebody hasn't broken them out or something, it's hard to tell. And the number of people that I talk about using other cars' reflections just to check my lights are all working, how many people don't realize, oh, hey, right. Just get behind a shiny car. It doesn't even have to be reflective. You just need to see the right number of spots on the car in front of you.
That's right. But what kills me further, though, is not the fact that they do it, but that if you actually flash your brights at them, you're now offending them.
Oh, but how many people are taking that old urban legend seriously? I can't flash my lights at the car without lights on. They'll turn around and kill me for a gang membership initiation.
Is that an urban legend? I've never
heard
of that.
Yes. Have you guys never heard that urban legend?
Never.
No.
That it's a car without its headlights on, and the car that flashes it, they turn around and go kill them for their initiation. That's
you say urban legend. That could be related to some aspect of it, and some percentage of what we're seeing.
I mean, it could very well have started somewhere seriously, but urban legends spread so quickly anymore. Maybe people are just afraid. I don't know.
I want to put an LED, what's that thing called? A marquee, a scrolling LED display that says, turn on your lights.
In traffic, I've actually written things out and held signs up. I'm not kidding, because I get really bored when we're not driving. So I've actually done that. Oh, and in some cases, written it backwards if I needed to hold it, like, you know, for people behind me or in a mirror.
You're talking about with you behind the wheel.
Yes. Atlanta traffic, you can be sitting still for a very long time.
So back in the 80s, they used to sell this novelty device called the Carmunicator, and it was looked like a ping pong paddle shaped thing that had a flip chart on it. And it had a variety of pre-printed message on the flip chart, everything from nice wheels to what are you doing for dinner to, you know, turn on your lights or something like that. So you could literally pick the right chart and hang it out your window so that the person behind you or next to you could say, yeah, let's go get dinner or whatever. Yeah, it was cute, but obviously. Yeah.
I'm going to go way back to, what was it, like the first or second or something, early episodes where I was talking about Adafruit. It's that website for Arduino and Raspberry Pi.
Yes.
It would be so easy to make that.
Yes,
absolutely. With components you can find at Adafruit. There's also a little one, it's an emoticon one, where you can push a button and it either smiles or scowls.
Yes.
I like the words one personally. You would just have to worry about
typing.
The words that you say. I know they still aren't allowed to have certain words on cars. I don't know if that would cover an LED scrolling.
Apparently, if you live in Florida, you're allowed to put a sign in your car that says, you eat ass. Have you heard about that?
So I heard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Guy actually
Maybe
went
I
to court. He got ticketed for something. His car says, I eat ass or whatever. And he went to court to defend it. And sure enough, the court said, you're violating his freedom of speech by telling him he can't. So.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I don't know how well that's going to go over in Georgia. You know, we are the heart of the Bible Belt here. But there is something I've been wanting to put on my front windshield.
Yeah.
And it's not...
Move
that
it's
so much a bad word now. It was back then, and it can tie in with the whole Bible Belt thing. I'm sure everybody probably knows by now. If not, my Jeep Liberty is getting a Firefly theme after the TV show / movie. And there's going to be various words around the car, like mocking the Jeep Wranglers that have different nicknames or what have you. Mine will say Brown Coats. the windshield, though, I want to say Big Damn Heroes. And if you know Firefly, you know why I want it. And
why can't you put that on your windshield? You could put that on
your
windshield.
The word damn used to be considered a cuss word, especially with its religious implication.
Well, I think we're beyond that. I think people are going to offend to other varieties.
They've said it on The Simpsons, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so go for it. Yeah.
Again, Georgia.
That's our barometer, The Simpsons.
Yeah.
No, Simpsons cannot be a barometer.
All right.
As a Sunday school teacher, as I am of kids, I would say that the word damn is not a swear word.
Ah, okay. There you go.
Well, then I will let whoever the cop is that pulls me over, I will let him or her know that you say.
Indeed, yes. Send them my way.
You have it from the authority.
I had actually asked a friend of mine who used to be a sheriff for the county that I live in, and he couldn't directly.
Sure.
I mean, he was able to answer what I did to my license plate, if you've ever noticed it, but he could not determine if the word damn was still considered expletive or not.
Well, if any of our listeners object to the word, please send your complaints to the FCC. Or not.
Not. Yeah.
Well, you know. So, any case. All right. Let's wrap up this episode on that note. the grand trivia auto question for the day was.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes.
German immigrant brothers founded which company based in South Bend, Indiana in 1852? They manufactured a variety of items before marketing an electric horseless carriage in 1902. Was that company Heine Velox, Studebaker, Jaeger, or Rickenbacker? Mm-hmm. Any guesses?
Very Paul. Easy. Very yeah. easy.
Yeah, I know this one too.
Yep.
I knew that. Why don't we see if Becca has it? I've got it.
Why? I just want to make a comment. I want a car that says Heine Velox on it. Okay, so I don't know. So maybe I'm totally wrong. I was leaning towards Rickenbacker.
Rickenbacker's your choice.
You can do this one by elimination.
Yes.
So Rickenbacker is a company that makes a wicked bass guitar.
I used to own one.
They may make some. Do they do standard guitars as well, or just bass?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So Rickenbacker makes musical instruments.
Okay, but you can't always because what was it? Daewoo made AC units. And,
absolutely.
Okay,
Yamaha makes motorcycles and
keyboards.
True, correct.
And this is what I get for dating the drummer, by the way. I know Zildjian.
Yeah,
there
yeah.
you go.
So anyway, the process of elimination.
So Jaeger is an alcoholic beverage.
That's
company,
where I was leaning.
And
but Studebaker was out of Tennessee originally, wasn't it?
I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's Studebaker.
Is it Studebaker?
Yeah,
it's Studebaker.
Okay, cool. I had thought that they had originally started in Tennessee.
They did not.
Records show that three men with the real with the last name Studebaker came to America from Holland in 1736.
You realize every time you say Studebaker, though, I get Billy Joel going through my head.
You know, he is the piano man.
And I doubt it was pronounced Studebaker when they were in their home country.
Right.
Studebaker. Studebaker.
And in fact, let me rephrase that again, because I think I screwed something up here. Records show that three men with the last name Studebaker came to America from Holland in 1736.
Yeah, you said they were German before, too.
Peter, one of the original immigrants, had a son named John who had five sons. They were the ones who went into the wagon business and eventually manufactured all types of carriages. By 1875, it is said that their factory was the largest vehicle house in the world. One of the brothers' son-in-laws, Fred Fish, suggested that the company begin the manufacture of the horseless carriages. The company continued to make automotive vehicles until the closing of the plant in Canada in 1966. So I'm going to have to check the spelling on Studebaker versus
and whether they're German or Dutch.
And whether, exactly.
You know, even by the 1950s, they were the oldest vehicle manufacturer in the world.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's a fascinating company. By the way, there was actually a Rickenbacker car at one time, too.
Was there really?
There you go.
But it wasn't from these guys.
So they say they're from Germany. Maybe their just embarkation point was Holland or something.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But a few weeks ago or a couple months ago, I got to visit the Studebaker Museum up in South Bend. Mm-hmm. And if you're ever up in that part of the world, I highly recommend it.
Can we modify a Studebaker?
You can modify anything.
Can we put an LS in it?
or a 281.
You remember when we went to the Motorama at the Speedway? There was a gorgeous hot-rodded Studebaker Commander there. I wonder what was in that.
Yeah, I do wonder what was in that. But
they're some of my favorite cars.
They're fun.
Yeah.
They're absolutely fun to look at and fun. I wish I could drive one so I could say
people joke about their looks, which is really just a couple models from the early 50s that, you know, were all that funny looking. But you know, for many years, Studebaker was a really technologically innovative company.
Sure. Well, on that note, I'm afraid to tell you we're out of time. So thank you to our audience for listening. As always, you can find us on thethingaboutcars.com or on Facebook. Just search for The Thing About Cars. If you like what we do, we value your financial support via our Patreon page. I believe that's Patreon/The Thing About Cars. And we love to get your questions and comments about these episodes. If you have any suggestions for future episodes or can help us go do the dealership visit thing, we very much want to hear from you. In the meantime, thanks to our friend Paul for helping us talk about Mazdas.
The Mazda man.
The Mazda man. And we'll look forward to seeing you in about a week with another episode. Have a great day.
Bye.
Later.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.